Well, now to a young Irishman who has been causing quite a sensation on Wall Street and throughout the world of finance. Ronan Ryan is one of the unlikely heroes of a new book called Flash Boys, A Wall Street Revolt by acclaimed American author Michael Lewis. He is the chief strategy officer at IEX, which is a technological platform for the trading of shares on the US stock market. Ronan, how did you end up starring in this book?
So Brad, our CEO and I had met with Michael a little over a year ago to do, he wanted some background information on a story he was writing. And as we met with him, he inquired as to what it was we're doing. We kind of explained, hey, we left our jobs and we're doing this startup venue. And he said, can I come by your office the next day? So he came by and he spent, like, you know, Michael Lewis is a fairly famous guy in the industry. And for him to spend a lot of time with us, we were pretty enthralled by it. And you know, he had said to himself he had no plans on writing another Wall Street book, but he kept exclaiming as we talked how bizarre our story was. So he asked if he could come back a few weeks later and sit down with us again, and it kind of went on and on like that for several months. And then he told us there may be an article in this. So he, you know, he's written in Vanity Fair quite often, and as we continued to meet through the summer of last year, he mentioned, you know, he thinks there's a book in this. And during that time frame, he interviewed hundreds of people in the industry. In and around the fall of last year, he mentioned to us, you know, I think I'm going to tell this story through the eyes of IEX. So, of course, we were thrilled. Did not know exactly what that meant. But, you know, a week before the book came out, the table of contents leaked. And I saw one of the chapters was named Ronan's Problem. And then I realized he's really telling this through our eyes. So it's been an amazing experience. I mean, we were on 60 Minutes, which is a massive TV show over here. I think something like 15 million people watched it, and virtually everybody I went to college with has reached out since to say, like, wow, you're doing well. So it's been fantastic. It's a humbling experience, to be honest. None of us were in the public limelight ever prior to this. So, you know, we're embracing it. Very busy, very humbled, but having a great time.
And what is Ronan's problem?
That's the exact same question my dad asked me when I sent him the article that it's going to be called Ronan's Problem. I think the problem was more the dilemma in that I had worked you know, for almost, you know, 12 years to get onto Wall Street. It was something that I'd always wanted to do, and when I was on Wall Street, we'd uncovered, you know, some issues, you know, structural inefficiencies within the market. We had developed some technology when we worked at the Royal Bank of Canada. As a broker, we'd obtained a lot of success. Lots of clients came on and were using it. And the technology was designed to combat predatory trading strategies. So, you know, a lot of times people like to say we're anti-high frequency. High frequency trading is just very low latency, very fast trading. We're not anti-high frequency trading. We're very much pro-technologists where we work. But we're focused on, you know, we're focused on thwarting those that use technology to intermediate institutional trading orders. So that's a long-winded sentence, but what I'm saying there is that a lot of people invest their monies in pensions and in retirement funds, and those retirement funds are managed by professional money managers who have to go out and trade on the open markets. They make fundamental decisions on what they want to buy, what they want to sell, but when they do go and buy and sell, they're buying in bulk. And when they buy in bulk, professional intermediaries have found a way to sniff out what they're buying are what they're selling, and that can have an impact on the price that they pay.
Now, I was listening to Mike Lewis explain elements of the book and the controversy, particularly in America, about what it is that you're doing. And he spoke about a rigged market, you know, that the financial markets were, in essence, rigged, because there was like a race before the signal, where it was a signal is given to execute a trade. It takes a certain period of time for that signal to go down a fibre optic wire, and that if you can shorten that signal, it gives you milliseconds in advance and gets you there beforehand. It sounds like ticket touting almost, getting there before you know people want to buy it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've learned after the 60 Minutes show that the word rigged is a very polarizing word. How I would phrase it more from a technology standpoint is that there's structural inefficiencies in the market, purposeful structural inefficiencies. And exactly what you said, when you're going out to buy a large amount of stock, a lot of people don't realize that you have to go out and access that stock at that price across numerous venues. And what Michael Lewis was saying is as we would go out to try and do that, you would arrive at these venues at different time intervals. And I mean, we're talking very short time intervals, a couple of milliseconds. So a millisecond being 1/1000th of a second. However, there are some intermediaries who could catch that signal and make a computational guess, if you will, that there's an institutional order coming. And in microseconds, which are millionths of a second, they can trade on that information and get ahead of the institutional order. So to me, where the real interest was in my background in telecom was this was just physics fighting physics. So that's how someone like me, who has a telecom background, ended up working on a Wall Street trading floor. I used to have network maps out on the table, and you know, these guys are shouting on the phone and trading all around me, and they used to call me boxes and lines guy because they couldn't understand what the hell it was I had rolled out on the desk. But in the end, understanding these structural inefficiencies and, you know, developing a solution to counterattack what they're doing, that's what proved very successful for us.
It's funny, though. I'm thinking about these fiber optic cables. So it's the speed of light. So the only way to slow down the speed of light is make it travel faster. How do you do it?
Yeah, so it's interesting. That's a really good question because, you know, the biggest component of latency is what's called propagation delay. It's a fancy word for saying how long it takes a signal to go over, you know, from point A to point B. What we're doing at IEX, that's a little bit different. We're keeping everybody on our venue 350 microseconds away from our venue. And the way in which we did that, you know, in line with your question, is we've actually coiled fiber in a box that now has, you know, a comical name called the Magic Shoebox. But we have coiled 38 miles of fiber in a box that's about 2 feet wide, 3 feet deep, and 13 inches tall. So by doing that, every trade that enters our venue must traverse 350 microseconds on the way in and 350 microseconds on the way out. And as simplistic as coiling fiber in a box sounds, what that means is that the earliest you'll find out that a trade occurred on IEX is a minimum of 350 microseconds after that trade occurred. We're not slowing down the trade from occurring. We're just slowing down the acknowledgement that the trade occurred. You can't find out that there's a large order trading, catch that signal, and front run that signal to another venue. So it's a very purposeful, you know, injection of latency. But again, it's 350 millionths of a second. It's minimal in you know, by eyeball time. I think a blink of an eye is 300 milliseconds. This is 1/1000th the blink of an eye. So we're hardly delaying things and bringing it back to archaic days either.
It is remarkable when people think about trading in shares or investors or whoever it is managing your pension fund or whatever. You think about, oh, I don't know, people with jackets maybe in certain colours and brokers with certain functions, and you go and you ask them and they give you a price and you go back. But this is so fast. This is computer, I presume, generated, trying to get there ahead of a signal, buy a load of stuff that they know you're coming to buy in 300 milliseconds of a whatever it is, and charge you more.
Yeah, absolutely. There are no more of those jacket traders that you would see. You know, before I left college, I worked at a bank called Chemical Bank that has since been bought by Chase Manhattan Bank. And at the time, I had gone to see the trading floor down on Wall Street, right? So the New York Stock Exchange trading floor used to be crowded with pits of traders shouting. And, you know, as close as you got to the trading post, you got your trade in quicker. But it was all like human interaction. When you go on the floor right now, it's almost, to a certain extent, a museum. At the opening and closing of the market each and every day, there's people there clapping, and when someone brings a company public, they're there. But other than that, all trades on the New York Stock Exchange, even those that are initiated from that floor, they all happen about 40 miles west of the city in New Jersey in a town called Mahwah. So everything now, all U.S. equities, and most asset classes, but all U.S. equities is traded electronically.
Now, Ronan, I am assuming that some of the big trading houses were making a lot of money out of this practice. Otherwise, you know, kind of what's the point, really? At the end of the day, there's big, big books going. You're taking the party away, the punch bowl away. I presume it's a pretty hot place to be right now.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was up in Boston on meetings last week, and I got an email from Michael, and he just in the subject wrote, "How you holding up?" And I wrote back, "Yeah, it's been more good than bad, but very very stressful, very exciting, but overall very positive 2 weeks." I'm like, "How you doing?" And he just writes back, I think the country's in an uproar at the moment."
Yeah.
So it's been great. It's been surprising for him too. You know, literally we have had thousands, and I mean thousands of emails from the average, you know, the general American public you know, thanking us for what we're doing, telling us that we're bringing back, we're restoring their faith in the market, whereas the detractors of IEX, you know, are telling us that we're ruining investors' confidence, which I think is wholly ironic, because over the last 5-6 years, there's been a lot of things happening in U.S. equity markets, like the flash crash, which I guess is where we got our name from, and a bunch of other, you know, technical glitches. And each and every time these things happen, you have someone come on the TV and say, oh, nothing to see here. Markets are better, more efficient than they've ever been. And people are kind of saying, you know, I don't know about that. So it's been unbelievable. I mean, the morning after the 60 Minutes show, I get into the office early, and on the main line there was a voicemail from a man from Kentucky who was a, you know, a war veteran, thanking us for what we're doing. And it's like one of those things that almost brings a tear to your eye, right? You come up with an idea, you quit your job, you slog away for 2 years, you launch a venue, it's going well, and then a book comes out and you're all excited about being on this TV show that 15 million people watch, and then a very real person gets off his couch, dials a number, and leaves a message to thank us. It's pretty amazing.
Well, people would probably be wondering, how did an Irish guy from Dundrum get into the middle of all of this?
I always seem to get into the middle of trouble. Ask my mother that. But it just so happened. My father was working over here for the IDA, and when I graduated college in 1996, he was dispatched back to Ireland with my family. But I stayed here. I was with my girlfriend, who became my wife and still is my wife. So I had planned to stay in the US.
Well, now in the book by Michael Lewis, there's a quote from you: "Ireland's not a great place for anyone who would choose to go back to." That was the way you were feeling at the time. explain
yeah,
that
funny.
Now, Ronan. They want to know what that means.
Yeah, I think that was taken a little bit out of context. But what it was this through the eyes of a 16-year-old boy who left Dublin in 1990, a different Dublin, and moved to Greenwich, Connecticut, which is, I don't know if you've ever been, it's just this beautiful part of America. I went to college over here, where my brother and sister were at college in UCD, working around the clock and living at home. I got to live, you know, at college. I had a lot of fun. I ran track over here. And it was a completely different life. So, you know, what I meant by the comment is I didn't want this life to end. I loved New York. I love the U.S., but I obviously still love Ireland. I go back to Ireland every single year, a couple of times a year. But it was a comment made more in jest. You know, a little bit of poetic license was used in the book. But, you know,
there's no crime in enjoying life in America. Yeah. Let me tell you that, for a young person being so successful indeed. And I'm sure that very many people will wish you great success with what it is that you're doing. You can come over here and sort out all our financial services as soon as you're finished there. We desperately need somebody like that with those kind of skills. The book is called Flash Boys, A Wall Street Revolt. It's by Michael Lewis. It tells the story of Ronan Ryan and his compatriots at IEX and how they're shaking the world up. Ronan, thank you very much.
Great. Thank you. Appreciate it.